And this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 14th of August 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 14th of August. And this week the editors were Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are £8,000 thief jailed, frustration over delays to homes, and migrant raid on restaurant. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
£8,000 thief jailed. A Hursley woman has been jailed for 12 months for stealing more than £8,000 from a pensioner while working as his cleaner. Jennifer Pawley, 52, took a bank card belonging to 81-year-old Frank McElvery of Deacon Road, Southampton, and went on a 10-day spending spree. Appearing at Southampton Crown Court this week, she was told her dishonesty had sickened her elderly victim. Jodie Meetle, prosecuting, said Pawley, 52, of Lower Shorelands, Hursley, had cleaned for Mr. McElvery for several months, initially as a representative from an agency and later privately. In July last year, he became aware of Pawley's fraudulent activity after receiving a letter from his bank. Police launched an investigation and established that she had used the card to withdraw cash from ATMs, as well as making a series of purchases that included clothes, curtains and a Blu-ray player. Miss Mittal said that Mr. McElvery had been putting the money aside to enable his family to pay for his funeral. She added that his trust in people had been tested as a result of Pawley's crimes. His current cleaner was someone he had known for many years, but still felt wary about letting her into his home. The money stolen by Pawley has since been repaid by the pensioner's bank, the court heard. The defendant, who had previous convictions for benefit fraud, admitted theft at a previous hearing. Alistair Wright, in mitigation, said she cleaned for Mr. McElvery for 18 months before turning to crime as a result of her appalling financial crisis. This is not someone who went all out to take advantage, he said. This is someone who came to crime quite late in the day. This was about making a home and dealing with debt. But the recorder, Marcus Davy, told her, this was a mean offence that was clearly a breach of trust. All this against an 81-year-old man who had invited you into his home to be his cleaner. It has had a significant effect on him. Pawley was jailed for 12 months, but was told she would serve only half her sentence. There was no order for costs or compensation.
Thank you. And now, Noel, let's have the second headline story, please.
Yes, frustration over delays to homes. Winchester's largest development in 40 years is facing delays. Work to build 2,000 homes on Barton Farm is now at least a month away, missing its target of a summer start. But hold-ups to electrical works, which led to months of traffic problems, will soon be resolved, according to the developer. Carla Holmes had planned to start the first phase of roadworks and house building during the school holidays to minimise disruption. But project director Rob Westwood, expressing frustration at the demands of civic leaders, has admitted construction will start in September at the earliest. We're fairly hopeful of making a start next month, he said. That's our aim at the moment, with planning conditions and the like with councils. You never know with councils, they keep asking for more and more information. It's rather frustrating. I'm pretty confident we'll be able to start with roadworks in early September, with construction a couple of weeks after that. Problems getting Southern Electric to lay power lines for streetlights had been resolved, he added. That means traffic cones on Andover Road North, causing congestion for 6 months, will soon be removed. The Barton Farm Forum heard last month that house building would start before the end of summer. The first phase includes 220 homes, 90 of them as social housing for people on the council waiting list. Some city councillors feel they have been left in the dark over progress. Councillor Eileen Berry, a member of the Barton Farm Forum and Conservative councillor for the neighbouring St Barnabas ward, said, "With Barton Farm, there are a few things they're ironing out. This is just an example of how we're all informed. What do we know about this? Not a lot." Speaking more widely about the council's development project, she added, "I get this feeling, like most people, that something's being put before us as something that's already more or less formalised in officers' or the council's minds." The council's leader, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, believed construction was due by the end of the year.
And the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is migrant raid on restaurant. Three Bangladeshi men have been arrested in an immigration raid on a restaurant in Wickham. The manager of Cootie's Wickham claims he didn't have time to check the papers of staff detained by immigration officers last week. Officers visited the Indian eatery on Fareham Road just before 8 p.m. on Thursday, August the 6th, the Home Office said on Tuesday. Staff were questioned to establish whether they had the right to live and work in the UK. Three men were arrested. A 22-year-old was working in breach of his visa, a 27-year-old had overstayed his visa, and a 36-year-old was found to have entered the country illegally. Restaurant manager Mahim Uddin told the Chronicle, "We had the papers, but they gave us the wrong one. It's a forged one. We didn't have time to check. What they gave me looks right, but we couldn't get to the Home Office to check. I rang three times, but it didn't go through." He plans to take the Home Office to court to challenge the detention, he added. The three were transferred to immigration detention pending their removal from the UK. Cooties was served a notice warning that a financial penalty of up to £20,000 per illegal worker arrested will be imposed unless the employer can demonstrate that appropriate right-to-work document checks were carried out, such as seeing a passport or a Home Office document. If proof is not provided, this is a potential total of up to £60,000. It is unclear whether the restaurant is still linked to the Cooties chain with head offices in Southampton. Asked about this by the Chronicle, Mr. Uddin refused to answer. Carla Johnson, head of the South Central Home Office Immigration Enforcement Team, said, "The message to businesses in Hampshire using illegal labour is clear. Our dedicated specialist teams will catch you, and if the correct checks have not been carried out, you will pay a heavy penalty. Illegal working cheats the taxpayer, undercuts honest employers, and often exploits some of society's most vulnerable people. We rely on information from the public, and I would urge people to report suspected immigration abuse to us."
And that concludes the front page headline stories. Now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum Diary, first person and editorial comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Boynton Spain, James Frederick Boynton Spain, aged 92. Bruce, Joy Bruce. Burroughs, Simon Hadley Burroughs, after a short illness. Farmer, Ida May Farmer, peacefully aged 92. Grant, Beryl Grant, aged 86. Hussey, Phyllis Margaret Hussey, aged 87, in Moorside Nursing Home. Marskell, Tony Marskell, aged 79. Richardson, Vera Bubbles Richardson, peacefully aged 92. Thomas, Beryl Rose Ney Loton Thomas. Whitfield, Evelyn Mary Whitfield, peacefully, aged 99. Wimbledon, Roy Wimbledon, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. And finally, Young, Alan Young, peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, aged 77. Now it's time for Christian comment read by Shirley.
Right, and this is headed A Marquee, Beer Pong and Jesus. Earlier this month, I discovered something quite remarkable about myself. It was my eldest daughter's 25th birthday party, held in a marquee in the rectory garden. I discovered I'm truly awesome at beer pong. Beer pong, just in case you are unfamiliar or have not attended university in the last 20 to 30 years, is where you rack up beer glasses containing some sort of libation, just as you would balls on a snooker rack, at each end of a long table. You are then required to throw a ping-pong ball into any of the glasses at your opponent's end, and if you do so, they have to drink the contents. Now, believe me when I say I do not wish to encourage binge drinking, because obviously the drink does not have to be alcoholic. But if it isn't, what's the point? In this instance it was, and I will confess it was the most fun I have had in years. My opponents, invariably around the age of 25 years old, thought it absolutely incredible that they were unable to beat me, a middle-aged vicar able to triumph over all and sundry at their own game. Their incredulity absolutely palpable. The thing is, between rounds of beer pong and whilst gathered in the battered old ex-army marquee, the young people sat along benches, talking, laughing and asking an unfeasibly large amount of questions, some of them quite deep, considered and intelligent. They ask the type of questions many people have, but often avoid. These young people were doing theology. I also, and perhaps because I'm wired this way, could not get from my mind the Da Vinci-esque Last Supper type image that was in front of me, a collection of friends gathered together along a long table. Weird. The reoccurring theme was not seemingly, is there a God, but how do we know him? I enthusiastically proclaimed, Jesus, he is the only way to truly know God, because God is love, and unless you love Jesus, you cannot possibly truly love God. If I'm honest, I was puzzled that these young people seemed not already to know this. I earnestly pointed out to them that actually Jesus is the coolest bloke at the party. His first miracle, turning water into wine, was just the start of him letting the world know he is the coolest bloke at the party. Wherever he went, people thronged to see him, be with him, touch him, because he is amazing. As I finished my homily to deafening silence, the situation was salvaged when my youngest daughter shouted, anyone for beer pong? And that was written by the Reverend Graham Balkett.
Yes, we'll continue with the letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle with your letter, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, or you can send it in an email to news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write it in the old-fashioned way to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 10 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Right. Michael Beer says, festival decision too little too late. Sir, I refer to the recent refusal of planning permission notice for Boomtown. It must have been known to the City Council since before Mr. Bruce put in his application in January 2014 that planning consent did not exist, and some of his supporting evidence proves that he has not had proper planning consent since 2001, breaking the law every year since then. Winchester City Council could have given notice last year that enforcement action would be taken to stop Boomtown 2015 taking place. However, they have left it until early July to say that action will not be taken, and the reasons are because there is only a short time until the event takes place. This is inexcusable. It's only because the South Downs National Park Authority has taken over responsibility for planning that this disgraceful situation has entered the public domain. Previously, it was all kept under wraps. That's Michael Beer, Hockley, Cheriton.
And this is a letter from Marvin B. Naylor, Winchester's busker, one of Winchester's buskers, headed A True Gentleman. Sir, I was very sad to hear the news of the death of Winchester businessman Ian Kingdon, chronicled July the 23rd. I made Ian's acquaintance many times since I began busking in the High Street almost 5 years ago, and he never failed to provide me with a generous donation, along with a gracious compliment, always expressed in his inimitable and eloquent way, with that little touch of humour. Unlike many others I have met over the years and who have featured in my busker's diary, I always wrote about Ian with great affection. For me, the High Street will never be quite as welcoming. Ian was a true gentleman. And that was from Marvin B. Naylor, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this one from Stephen Stanford, headed No Mention of Fee. Sir, last weekend saw the initial staging of the Cheese and Chili Festival at North Walls Recreation Ground in Winchester. Despite the glitzy adverts, no mention was made of a £5 entry fee. Throughout the period, 8 feet metal fencing panels were erected, which made the area resemble a third world prison camp. Many walkers were prevented from using Winnell Moor's pathway into the park, and vice versa, with no public notices posted anywhere. If the council is going to allow this pretentious nonsense, they should at least make sure it's conducted in an appropriate manner. Stephen Stanford, Wales Street, Winnell, Winchester.
And here's another complaint about the Cheese and Chili Festival from John O'Leary. Headline, Charge a Cheek. Sir, I was looking forward to the Cheese and Chili Festival, and having finally found it at the back of Winchester Recreation Centre after a lot of walking due to poor lack of signing, I was most put out when I was asked for an admission fee of £5 each to enter. This was not shown on their advert in the Chronicle. Had this been made clear, I would not have bothered to take the time just to sample a few cheeses. I could see that several people like me declined to fork out £10 and more if they had children. I think it was a cheek to charge this amount, and very short-sighted, especially as the traders would have paid for their pitch anyway. I wonder how many people declined this exorbitant fee. John O'Leary, Rance's Way, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And this is from Karen Barrett and is We Will Fight On. Sir, as a member of the Unite Union, I was amused by the letter from John Airy, Chronicle, July the 30th. He is obviously not a socialist or a fan of trades unions, so his concern over the future of the Labour Party is quite touching. I can reassure him, however, that the democratic process for choosing a new leader will only be undermined if Tories who want to ensure a Jeremy Corbyn victory are prepared to lie in order to register for a vote. Those who do so should be very careful what they wish for. The loony electorate, of which I'm a proud member, will continue to fight for fair wages, truly affordable housing, and public services, whoever ends up as leader. Unscrupulous employers and greedy landlords had better watch out. And that was from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this one is from Eric Horn, and it's headed, Wall is Excellent. Sir, I fully agree with John and Wendy Hunt, Chronicle, Letters, July 30th, and it is good that their appreciation of the new wall on Water Lane has been published, as it is well deserved. The design, the quality of materials, and the workmanship are excellent, rare these days, and the resulting wall has made a significant contribution to its environment. which is appropriate, as it is, I believe, the work of the Environment Agency and not the City Council. If they had been involved, the wall would probably have been built in concrete blocks after the next flood. Eric Horne, Sussex Street, Winchester.
Yes, Anne Bristow complains about bungalows being ruined. Sir, aesthetics were mentioned by Rosemary Poole in last week's edition of your newspaper. How I agree with her. Please could we do something about developers purporting that they are extending a small home for themselves? Bungalows and small houses are the target. They are turned into villas. Bordering hedgerows, shrubbery and trees are grubbed out. The original purpose of the hedges, privacy, sound absorption and a screen to withstand the very strong winds, gone. When the family, purporting that it is their main home, is asked if they are staying in the house, the reply is, if we can afford it. These developers stay in that property for the statutory period to avoid capital gains tax, then sell and move on to their next target. Give the planners more authority. Developers should reveal themselves when seeking planning permission, not pretend that they are a family making a new home in the area. These properties are developed without any consideration of their surroundings. Those vanishing hedgerows are even more important as a wildlife corridor. Think hedgehogs and sparrows. What were pretty front gardens are completely stripped to be turned into car parks accommodating numerous cars. Anne Bristow, Keats Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And Peter Hargreaves writes, start building. Sir, my concern is that senior Winchester City councillors, Labour Group leader Janet Berry and Lib Dem Martin Todd, do not seem to have a thorough understanding of their housing brief and are simply playing politics when they should be proactively seeking solutions to the housing problem. Firstly, after Margaret Thatcher introduced Right to Buy, thousands of council tenants who had no hope of ever owning their home were able to do so. The problem facing councils today is that since 1997, government and councils failed to continue building houses in anywhere the number required, and unless the situation improves dramatically, we will not have houses for our children. The immediate problem of regeneration lies with housing associations, HA. In 2014, private house builders built 115,000 new homes, while HA built just 23,000. It seems that HA are content to sit back and collect rents, while their chief executives pocket huge salaries. Channel 4 News revealed that 40 HA executives earn more than the Prime Minister, while one received £434,000 last year. Although the government didn't cut grants to HA in 2010, it is nonetheless a fact HA received over £23 billion in government grants over the past 4 years, enough to build 230,000 homes, and would have been as many as the private sector over the same period. The problem is that HA do not seem to want to be in the business of house building. When asked how much it costs to build a new home, HA said £150,000. But when the same question was put to the Home Builders Federation, they quoted £90,000 for a three-bedroomed home including land. Councillors Berry and Todd have lost focus in dealing with Winchester's housing problem. The right to buy is just and fair for council and HA tenants. The answer to the regeneration problem is to get the HA fat cats off their backsides and start aggressively building homes instead of sitting back and assuming collecting rents is all they are here for. Regeneration must now become the council's focus through re-energising HA. Councillors simply whinging and playing politics will not resolve the urgent issue for Winchester. And that was from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
John Gibson writes, Sir, I cannot believe how our system of confidentiality can override the far-reaching effects of Silver Hill on the historic capital of England. I am confused with where confidentiality and transparency become incompatible. I believe there should be no room for withholding information, putting it under the cloak of confidentiality. There needs to be transparency in the activities of all parties. Stating that one is prevented by confidentiality to go into financial and legal details begs the question, what is going on? What is the real agenda? The Brooks has been mentioned. Without doubt, a failure primarily. In my opinion, the architect may know how to draw a building, but when it came to animal-human behaviour, didn't have a clue. No animal willingly enters a tunnel that starts large and becomes smaller. That, in effect, is exactly what the entrances to the Brooks are. Regardless which entrance is used, the visual feedback shows a potential trap. Our subliminal inborn animal instinct prevents us from going in. Only the bigger reward, or no alternative, may entice one to enter. Rhetorically, is there much to encourage people to go into the Brooks? Extinction is forever. Winchester, like any living being, is bound to change whether man influenced or not. What I am asking for is a situation that is perhaps too much to ask of mortals. Complete honesty and openness. Who gets what and deals is achievable, but only when this confidentiality nonsense is thrown out. I think, let's get on with it. And procrastination are both wrong approaches. Piecemeal development done sympathetically with needs of the city, considering all users, is surely better than committing to a huge development that, if it is wrong, like the Brooks, makes I told you so rear its unwelcome head. Where to start regarding our debacle made by Winchester City Council is not easy, when it is even harder. Remembering extinction is forever hopefully will have a sobering effect for those empowered to influence the Silver Hill project, and wish that common sense may put in an appearance. John Gibson, Lynch Close, Week, Winchester.
And this letter is from Rupert Pitt. Why the secrecy? Sir, Winchester City Council on July the 15th voted to continue with the developer Henderson to build on the Silver Hill site. I wonder why, when they had the opportunity to ditch Henderson. I think it was from fear that this has been going on for 18 years, they could have no further delays. If they had listened to the people of Winchester, as witnessed by the correspondence in the Chronicle, observed how many people were on the march in November 2014, and listened to the speakers at the three public meetings about Silver Hill in July, August and December 2014, they would know the opposition to this scheme and to Henderson's plans. But they did not listen. After all of the public meetings in 2014 and 2015, they went into exempt session, i.e. the public cannot attend, it is secret. Former Councillor Patrick Davis and Councillor Martin Todd spoke movingly about this and objected to very important matters relating to Winchester being discussed without scrutiny. Why all the secrecy? Lord Acton, the great Victorian historian who said power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely, also said, "Everything secret degenerates, even the administration of justice. Nothing is safe that does not show how it can bear discussion and publicity." What has gone on in these exempt sessions? Sadly, I fear that many of the city councillors are just very average people. I cannot recall one interesting comment made by the Cabinet over the last 13 months in all the meetings I have attended. Robert Humby, Frank Pearson and Stephen Godfrey are well-meaning men, but at many of the meetings they seemed out of their depth. As Nye Bevan commented on the Neville Chamberlain, the British Prime Minister in 1937 to 1940, during the debate in Munich, "Listening to a speech by Chamberlain is like paying a visit to Woolworths, everything in its place and nothing above a penny." The same could be said about the Conservative councillors. And that was from Rupert Pitt. Prize Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And that concludes the letters to the editor. Thank you for everyone who contributed. And now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, what do you make of ministers' comments regarding swarms of marauding migrants coming to the UK? Noel has the answer.
Yes, I got four answers. Helen Saldana, 28, care assistant of Rowlings Road Week, said, I agree that it's bad. The way it's portrayed in the news suggests people are constantly coming over. There's a lot of negative coverage about it. And Terry Shanahan, 63, company owner of Hyde Street, Winchester, said, I think it's just been blown out of all proportion. If he'd said a lot, would that have made any difference? It's not what the story's about. It's pedantic. And Jen Khatun, 26, sales consultant of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, said, it's just words. It's his description. I wouldn't really say that it's racist or derogatory. It's just a figure of speech. Anyone would use that phrase. And then Simon Baker, 40, manager of Hurst Close, Chandler's Ford, said, well, he's not wrong there. There are too many people. My dad goes to Calais and he says it's unbelievable how many migrants are trying to get in.
And we're now going back through the mists of time through our dusty files for historical news items. And we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was August the 10th, 1990. The first one, Boys Club in Crisis. King Alfred's Boys Club Winchester faces a serious crisis with a big reduction in its activities because Hampshire County Council is to withdraw funding. Money that has been forthcoming for the last 15 years for an assistant youth worker is being withdrawn for the first time. The authority says it has not got the money and needs to stay within budget. We're disappointed at this development, said Mr. John Ead, chairman. 1,000 kids a month go through our hands. Because of the prospect of losing this funding, we can't have another assistant leader. And the second item, shops may not open. Although the Brooks development will be ready in October, only a few shops are likely to be open by Christmas, Mr. Peter Martin, managing director of Ladbroke City and County Land, indicated. After the topping out ceremony at the building on Tuesday, he said that with a fitting out time of 6 to 12 weeks, not many shops were likely to be ready for the full Christmas season. There was reluctance to open just before Christmas, then close for the holiday, leading into a quieter time. Mayor Pamela Peskett said after the opening, I have put in a plea for low-cost children's clothing to be available in one of the shops of this development.
Now let's go back 50 years ago with Shirley.
50 years ago, August 14th, 1965. This is in two parts. The inscription on the Saxon tomb found by the archaeologists on the Cathedral Green last week has now been read, and a fuller translation reads, Here lies Gunn, the Earl's companion. This, in the opinion of Mr. Martin Biddle, excavations supervisor, is more probable than the one given when the tomb was first uncovered, which spoke of five earls who crossed the sea. Presumably, the earl in this latter context was the then Earl of Wessex. The complete east end of the 10th century Minster is now clearly defined on the cathedral site, and among the finds this week has been a fine silver penny of the reign of King Edmund of Wessex, 940 to 946. And the second part of this, hunt for puma. Farmers armed with shotguns searched without success at dawn on Wednesday for a puma reported to have been seen at Hall Lands Farm, Mortimer's Lane, Fair Oak. But large footprints were discovered for the third day running. Earlier, a plaster cast had been taken of a foot impression 5.5 inches long and 4 inches wide, showing definite traces of claw marks. The puma was reported to have been seen early on Monday morning by Barry Sykes, a 19-year-old soldier of Oakland's Mortimer's Lane.
Now let's go back 100 years, Noel.
Yes, August the 14th, 1915, and of course we're only a year into the First World War now. Two items. The first headed Trench Warfare, London. On the Western Front during the week there has been considerable amount of hard trench fighting, which on the whole has proved favourable to the Allies. On the Eastern Front, the Russians, hard-pressed, are still retiring, and the enemy has occupied a certain amount of fresh territory, but no decisive action has been fought. There are rumours of the Kaiser having offered peace to the Tsar, and if this should prove true, it shows that Germany feels its sense of uneasiness of the situation. Sir Ian Hamilton reports substantial progress in the general advance along the Gallipoli Peninsula. And the next item is Zeppelin attack. A squadron of hostile Zeppelin airships visited the east coast on Tuesday night when some fires were caused by the dropping of incendiary bombs. But these were quickly extinguished and only immaterial damage was done. One Zeppelin was seriously damaged by gunfire of the land defenders and was reported later being towed into Ostend.
And finally, 200 years ago, Jane.
And 200 years ago was August the 14th, 1815. Firstly, ruffian stabbed. London. A ruffian in the guise of a gentleman obtruded himself on the company of the two Mrs. Cripps of Lambeth while walking in Battersea Fields on Thursday evening, and though repeatedly desired to abstain from his familiarities, he still persisted in them, and at length proceeded so far as to take an indecent liberty with one of the sisters, which so exasperated the other that she stabbed him with a silver knife she had in her hand. He instantly fell, and the ladies, terrified at what they had done, called for assistance. The wound is in no respect dangerous. And secondly, sailing match wager, Winchester. The annual regatta and sailing match, which will shortly take place at Cowes on the Isle of Wight, has attracted numbers of amateurs to participate in the pleasure and interest this delightful and animating scene never fails to produce. A match made on Monday last between Joseph Welt, Esquire, owner of the yacht Charlotte, and Thomas Ashton Smith, Jr., Esquire, owner of the yacht Elizabeth, both members of the yacht club, for 500 guineas, is likely to afford much sport and speculation. Both vessels are of beautiful model and construction, and each gentleman equally confident of this yacht's superiority.
And it's back to the present, and Shirley is going to read an alternative look at the news, and it's Belgarum Diary.
Right, this consists of four sections, and the first one is headed Competition Seeks Cakes to Liven Up Wakes. They're unlikely to make the cut on the Great British Bake Off, but the people of Winchester are being asked to craft cakes to liven up a wake. The leading lights of the funeral industry will be in Winchester next month for the Ideal Death Show, a free exhibition in St John's House on September the 5th, includes a competition for the best funeral cake. Organisers want creations to match entries from previous years. Entry costs £5. The winning baker wins a £100 meal for two. And the next one is headed Cryptic Crosswords Top City. Winchester has been named one of the most cryptic locations in the country because of constant references to it in newspaper crosswords. According to Puzzler Media, a UK cryptic crossword magazine publisher, Winchester is one of the most enigmatic locations, alongside Ascot, Brighton, Chelsea, Caerphilly, Edinburgh, Leicester, Somerset, Twickenham and Ulster. Sue Purcell, group editor at Puzzler Media, said, "Place names often feature in cryptic crossword clues, especially British locations, as frequently our towns and cities have unusually spelt names or atypical pronunciation lending themselves to cryptic clues. Cryptic crossword clues rely on devices such as puns, anagrams and wordplay. Therefore, names such as kefili, in brackets a pear in cold cheese, sorry, a pear in cold cheese, and Leicester, city with less to say, are a crossword setter's best friend. A clue for Winchester could be cathedral where we christen, perhaps. While there's not an obvious link between our top 10 on the face of it, all these places have something special to offer, as well as their starring role in crosswords, added Miss Parcell. The next article, 6 months to go, and it's Christmas. Belgorum got a shock last week. When opening emails, we saw the dreaded C word. While we are partial to a mulled wine, Christmas doesn't come to mind in August. But the cathedral team are hard at work planning this year's offering and reminded us all that the festive season is less than 6 months away. It's the 10th Cathedral Christmas Market on November 19th. And the last article here, car park provides backdrop for headshots. Winchester is not short of beautiful backdrops. All the more puzzling, then, for Belgorum to stumble upon a young actor getting his headshots done at Chesil Street car park. Senan Richmond, 15, a budding musical star, was there to shoot photos for his website and CV. Photographer Stuart Allen, based in Chandler's Ford, likes the lighting at the multi-story. Unfortunately for the workers who have spent the last few weeks painting the place, it won't be recognisable when the actor's face is in shallow focus.
And now, first person this week is by George Hayden.
Yes.
And it's read by Noel.
Yes, and I think it may raise a few hackles this week. George Hayter says, is Lord Sewell really so bad? No harm done. That's my analysis. Yes, I know everyone is shocked, scandalised, outraged and feeling let down, but looking at it logically and from a non-judgmental Christian moral viewpoint, I don't think Baron Sewell did much wrong. His consumption of a white powder and convorting with willing prostitutes may be distasteful, but on the other hand, it was not malicious. After all, he did it in private without hurting anyone. I know Lord Sewell has been ridiculed since a tabloid newspaper secretly filmed what appeared to be a sex and drugs session. The former Under Secretary of State for Scotland in Tony Blair's government was, at the time of the expose, no less than Deputy Speaker of the Upper House. If the white powder was cocaine, as some assume, then he's still done nout wrong, in my opinion. Did the Ten Commandments prohibit intoxicants? Did Jesus speak out against mind-altering substances? Not that I recall. In fact, he once multiplied alcohol at a wedding. In my personal view, the only damage done by John Sewell was to his own nostrils, and that only if the powder was cocaine. The damage to the reputation of the House of Lords wasn't done by his lordship. That was the work of the press and commentators who attacked and ridiculed him and called for him to go. His antics looked foolish, but paying for intimacy and alleged consumption of a drug should be cause for sympathy and understanding rather than anger. It dismays me that the electorate does not separate the public role of politicians from their private lives. Whatever weird and unsavoury things that public figures do behind closed doors is none of my concern, as long as they do not damage, hurt or steal. About 20 years ago, I dared to hope that the public were becoming more tolerant when the then MP for Eastleigh, Stephen Milligan, was found to have indulged in solo sex with a cord and an orange. After the revelation, people seemed sympathetic, but that may have been only because Milligan had accidentally strangled himself. Perhaps politicians only escape opprobrium for wayward sex if they are dead. More recently, another local politician, Mark Oughton, was hounded from the Lib Dem front bench after he was front-paged. Winchester voters did not exactly cast the first stone, but neither did they encourage the MP to remain in his job. Oughton was a major political talent, but sadly did not seek re-election as an MP. I believe society is wrong to think that Oughton, Milligan and Sewell were involved in scandal. What they did was personal behaviour affecting only themselves and perhaps those close to them. Some politicians have caused real scandal, such as those taking cash for questions or convicted for fraudulent expense claims or allegedly misusing their power to abuse children. Some progress has been made in telling the difference between those real scandals and mere sex exposés. A few years ago, homosexuality was considered a scandal. Today, gay politicians increasingly feel liberated from public disapproval. That freedom should be extended to public figures of all sexual tastes that do not involve coercion. Go back far enough and you'll find that we've not always been saddled with today's intolerance. Minds were more open in classical times. In ancient Greece, homosexuality and prostitution were accepted. I'm not suggesting we revert to the mores of the ancients, merely that we think before condemning anyone for eccentric private behaviour. For all of us today, bad behaviour in professional life must be one thing, and bad behaviour in our private lives another. That should be the same for politicians, including Lord Sewell.
Now, Jane's got the editorial comment.
And the editorial comment this week is public should comment on plans. The Chronicle today again prints more images of ideas from snug architects and students at Southampton University for the station approach redevelopment. Ideas stretch from corporate headquarters to houses, a concert hall and parkland. If realised, it would transform the slightly dowdy area into a commercial and cultural hub. Nothing has been finalised. We are at a very early stage. Now is the chance for the public to get involved in influencing the process. It is a fact that for a decade, too few people took an active interest in Silver Hill. When a large number did so, it was effectively too late and the momentum for the Thornfield-Henderson scheme was too strong.
Now it's time for What's On. There's a Kate Bush tribute act. And now, Kate Bush is known for such iconic songs as Wuthering Heights and Babushka. And people will certainly be dreaming of Kate after a tribute act performs the star's classics at the Lights in Andover. Singer and performer Maike Breikman recreates Kate Bush's well-known tracks on September the 12th, giving people a rare opportunity to see her songs brought to life in a show with close attention to the detail of her music and performance, for which she is so well remembered. Miss Breikman is accompanied by a live band who have worked with a range of major international artists who will help to coordinate her many unique dance moves. Tickets cost £18.50 in advance, £19.50 on the door for the event, which starts at 8 p.m. Call 01264 368 368 or visit sweeneyentertainments.co.uk. That's for tickets. And there's a picture of Miss Breikman giving it a Kate Bush performance. Now there's a lineup takes shape at Varied Festival of Song. A Hampshire festival has announced the first wave of acts on its lineup. Dials is a brand new event taking place across five venues in Southsea, Portsmouth on October the 3rd. Headlining will be Liverpool-based indie rockers Hooton Tennis Club, while there will also be performances by Brighton internet sensations Black Honey and goth soul singer Chloe Black. Festival director Abby Eales says, "We aim to nurture and promote the cultural life of Portsmouth by presenting a range of exciting and musical acts across all genres to lead to greater musical awareness, education and a continuance of the growth of the cultural life of the city." The lineup also includes a host of local bands, including aggressive blitz pop trio Kerches, acoustic pop singer Jerry Williams, a new wave rap group Mock, and guitar noisemith Ricky Fitz. For more detail and tickets, visit kingsportsmouthco.uk/whatson/event/dials-festival. And at the Theatre Royal Winchester, from Monday the 12th to Saturday the 17th of October, we have Flare Path by Terence Rattigan. And if you want tickets for that, the box office number is 01962 840 440 and the website is www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. I'm afraid there is no indication as to what time it starts. And finally, at the Plaza Theatre Romsey, on the 13th to the 17th of October, there is The Safari Party by Tim Firth. Three families clash at a mobile dinner party in this hilarious comedy. And for tickets, you go to box office 01794 512 987 or www.plazatheatre.com. Lighting up times. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 14th of August at 5:50 a.m. and begins at 8:29 p.m. On Wednesday the 19th of August, it ends at 5:58 a.m. and begins at 8:19 p.m. So you can see days are getting shorter already. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. So now we'll continue with general items. We'll start with one read by Shirley.
Right, this one is headed Confidence in Doctor's Surgery. Winchester Civic Chief Stephen Godfrey has given reassurances over the future of a new doctor's surgery. St Clement's Surgery in Tanner Street is to move in the Silver Hill scheme. Planning permission has been given for it to be built on the car park at the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street. City Councillor Rose Burns sought assurances that the relocation would satisfy the doctors and cause no loss of service to patients. Councillor Godfrey said the council has obtained a planning consent for a new surgery which would provide facilities which far exceed in quality those of the existing building. This consent may have to be reapplied for given the delays to the project, but assuming it is not opposed for reasons unrelated to the provision of medical facilities, then the granting of a new consent should be straightforward. Councillor Godfrey added, the City Council intends to procure and deliver the new surgery itself, and this requires a detailed business case. But the head of estates, Kevin Warren, expects that such a case can be made, if needs be taking into account the benefits of new primary healthcare facilities to the well-being of the community. The procurement and construction of the new surgery is on the critical path for delivery of the overall development, and the developer is well aware of the requirements for healthcare provision to be provided without disruption.
Solar farm approved. One of the biggest solar farms in Britain is coming to Hampshire countryside. German company Kronos has been given the green light to build a 185,472 panel solar farm at Houghton near Stockbridge. Government Communities and Local Government Secretary Greg Clark has backed Test Valley Councillor's decision to approve the controversial application at Everley Farm. Councillors approved the scheme in April, but within hours, the then government minister, Eric Pickles, put a holding direction on the plans, preventing Kronos from going ahead until he decided whether to call the application in. When Mr. Pickles lost his job in the government reshuffle after May's general election, it was left in Mr. Clark's hands. And he has now announced the proposed solar farm on land owned by Test Valley councillor Danny Busk can now go ahead. Everley Farm Solar Park project manager Makan Yarandi said, "We are very pleased of the outcome. It was a long journey spanning over 2 years, but considering it will be one of the largest solar parks in the UK, it was well worth the effort." Construction is set to begin in September and will take approximately 6 months to complete. He added, it will provide clean energy to more than 12,500 households per year, which will make a significant contribution to reducing carbon emissions. We expect the solar farm to begin generating clean, sustainable power by April 2016. Originally, Kronos applied to build an even larger and more contentious scheme involving 225,456 solar panels, but it was rejected by councillors. The bid was scaled down to 185,472 panels, and councillors agreed to it. Borough Councillor Alan Dowden, who supported the application, said, "At last, common sense has prevailed. Solar farms are essential in providing clean, renewable energy, and we cannot continue to rely on fossil fuel energy supplies that evidence has shown is damaging the environment." A proposed solar farm at Warden Farm in North Baslesley was approved last month, and others are planned at Ampfield and on the Broadlands estate at Lee near Romsey.
And this article is headed Snug Visions, and it is accompanied by two pictures. One is a photograph of the Andover Road area, rather dingy, just behind the cattle market near the station, as it is today. And another one which shows the cattle market as a potentially a drawing of a big green space with several large, probably four-storey high buildings on it, and clusters of other new buildings around the area as part of the regeneration. And it says, "These images show in more detail how a group of students want to revamp Winchester's station area. Last week, the Chronicle revealed the first plans from Snug architects and students at Southampton University for the station approach scheme. Their plans, published in a video tour, include a roundabout on the City Road junction, a public square over the Cattle Market car park, and a new concert hall. Fresh impressions show how they would accommodate office blocks along Andover Road, which the City Council hopes will lure major companies to the city. Last month, warnings were sounded that two of the biggest employers could leave the city if new commercial space is not built. One of the major headquarters would be between the station and Upper High Street," said Paul Barkley, director of Snug Architects. "The students are also looking at whether a pedestrian bridge could be built over the railway alongside Andover Road. Snug Architects hopes to enter the council's design competition for the area that stretches from the railway line at Andover Road to Sussex Street. But Chris Higgins, former head of estates at Winchester University and now a member of City of Winchester Trust, has urged councillors to learn from past development controversies. He said, when the Brooks was subject to a developers' competition in the mid-80s, the City Council said all the same things as now. In the end, all that detailed briefing and consultation was thrown out like the baby with the bathwater, and the Council accepted the highest financial officer, disregarding all their previous criteria. The result has been a disaster. An updated video from Snug Architects can be viewed on hampshirechronicle.co.uk.
And this is headed Challenge Tribute to Dad of Two. A Winchester man has completed a 142-kilometre cycling challenge in memory of a father who lost his six-year battle with cancer. Grant McKnight, who works as an air traffic controller, completed the L'Étape du Tour, which covers the route of a single mountain stage of the Tour de France. Along with Jody Roger of Beaconsfield, the two climbed 5,000 metres from Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne to the ski resort of La Toussière. They have raised more than £6,000 towards the Imperial College Healthcare Charity and Cancer Research UK. At just 38 years old, the pair's friend Fraser Dunlop was given less than a year to live when he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. The father of two survived for a further 5 years thanks to treatment at Hammersmith Hospital and his determination to beat the disease, but died in April. 2 years ago, he completed the cycling challenge and raised £4,000 for Cancer Research UK. Mr. McKnight, 45, grew up with him in Scotland before moving to Winchester. He said his second daughter was only 2 weeks old when he was given 9 months to live. Then he started meeting really good consultants through Imperial College, and they gave him hope.
Young carer wins award. A young Winchester carer has been named the best coordinator in Britain 7 years into his career. Daniel Langridge became a carer aged 18 to look after his grandmother, Phyllis, who was diagnosed with breast cancer. 7 years later, he has been named the best care coordinator in the country for his work arranging service for more than 130 people. Mr. Langridge of Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, picked up the gong last month at the Great British Care Awards in Birmingham. His agency, Bluebird Care, took home the Service Excellence Award at this year's Winchester Business Excellence Award. Claire Murphy, owner and director at Bluebird Care, said, "This is a dream come true for us and our team, as it well and truly exemplifies the standards we adhere to here at Bluebird Care. We are delighted to be championing all that is good in home care, which is delivered by hard-working, highly skilled care professionals, raising the bar for the care sector." Mr. Langridge said he was massively proud of the win.
And now the Gurkha exhibition opens. Previously unseen artefacts recording 200 years of Gurkha service to Britain have been unveiled at the unit's Winchester Museum. Items and archives now on show at the Gurkha Museum in Peninsula Barracks include a flag retrieved from Everest Base Camp after the Nepal earthquake earlier this year. The new exhibition was opened by Brigadier John Anderson, chairman of the Gurkha Brigade Association, with dignitaries from Britain and Nepal, including Mayor Angela Clear and Captain Budi Bahadur Bhandari. The flag, one of 200 objects on display, was planted by a team of Gurkhas attempting to scale Mount Everest to raise funds for the Gurkha Welfare Trust. The exhibition features interactive displays, children's quizzes, and a special G200 shop. It is free for museum ticket holders and opens from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Saturday. Gurkhas are celebrating 200 years of service to the Crown this year.
This is headed Lonely Old Folk Helped. A new scheme to help tackle loneliness among older people is reported to be going well. The Hampshire County Council launched the initiative to bring people together at weekend social clubs and sites across Winchester, Fareham and Farnborough. The clubs are run by Winchester charity Brendan Care, which operates around 80 such clubs in Hampshire and Dorset. Hampshire Executive Member for Adult Social Care, Councillor Liz Fairhurst, said, "Loneliness can blight the lives of many older people, leaving them feeling isolated within their local communities. We know that improving social interaction can have a beneficial effect not only on mental well-being, but also on physical health." Councillor Fairhurst added, "I'm delighted that through our grant programme, the Council has been able to support the introduction of this new initiative for Winchester's older residents." The Winchester Saturday Club meets at the Discovery Centre on Drury Street every Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. and sessions cost £2.50. Activities offered include indoor curling, games, quizzes and guest speakers. New members are always welcome, as well as volunteer helpers.
Village show goes back to the 50s. The sights and sounds of 1950s England returned to Oslebury on Saturday for its revived horticultural show. Nostalgia ruled the day as hundreds of people enjoyed cream teas and produce, echoing the traditions of many Hampshire villages. Brass band music rang across the glebe field while women walked the grounds in period dress. Nigel and Jennifer White resurrected the show in 2013 after a gap of some 40 years. Mr. White, 59, who runs a vehicle recovery firm, said, "The point about the show is as a recreation of the show as it was when I was a little boy. The brass band, the white marquees, and we put a lot of effort into recreating that 1950s horticultural show feeling." Music came from the New Forest Training Brass Band and Winchester-based Wessex Chordsmen Barbershop Ensemble, while farmers and schoolchildren competed for 21 trophies in plants, preserves, cakes, paintings and more. After the prize-giving and auction of produce, essential to recovering the show's costs of around £5,000, the village celebrated at what was hoped would be its largest ever evening party. For the first time, Mr. White was preaching. The evangelist rounded off 3 days of events on Sunday evening with a talk under the marquee opposite the church where he and Jennifer married on the weekend of the first show.
And now MP backs wall. Winchester could soon have its own community-run climbing wall under a new start-up. Entrepreneur Marty Orton wants to transform waste ground under the overpass at Bar End into a climbing centre with a cafe and wild play area for children. Mr. Orton, who moved to St. Cross from London 2 years ago, is inviting public feedback on how the site should look and what facilities are needed. He said, "Winchester really deserves and needs a climbing centre, one that welcomes children, families and young people. But it's not just about climbing. We want to see a space that really encourages children to play wild, is built sustainably and, importantly, is run by the community it serves. Put simply, we're a committed local group who are campaigning to use this neglected land as a sustainable and fun community space. It promises adventure, indoor climbing, outdoor risky play for all ages, a community space for other activities, great locally sourced food and a decent coffee. The wall is under the bridge that until 1994 ran over to the A33 Winchester bypass." Mr. Orton is backed by Winchester MP Steve Brine, who said, "I know that Winchester is one of the only cities in the country which does not have a climbing wall, and I'm so impressed at Marty's dedication, passion and commitment, which has seen him make it this far. The amazing thing about this site is that it's got 8 acres of wilderness here, so we're wanting to look after that wilderness, but at the same time, use it for young people to be able to play outdoors. B Mountain is running consultations in September to create a master plan for the site. And this is accompanied by a picture of the space under the Bar End Bridge and Marty Orton and Steve Brine triumphantly waving an arm whilst hanging from a climbing feat marks on a climbing wall at Bar End.
Huge drop in job seekers' allowance receiver figures. The number of people claiming job seekers' allowance, JSA, has more than halved across Hampshire. Figures show the number of claimants has dropped by as much as 68% in some parts of the county since 2010, although the most recent figures show unemployment rose for the first time since early 2013, this year. Conservative MPs say the JSA figures show that the party's plans are bearing fruit and that they will work to increase the number of people in work further. But Labour say the figures do not take into account people who are sanctioned for not turning up to JSA meetings, but who are still unemployed, or the types of jobs taken. The statistics released by the Office for National Statistics show that 3,560 fewer people now claim JSA or Universal Credit in the three Southampton constituencies than in 2010. The number of claimants in Southampton Itchen dropped from 2,560 to 1,062, while in Southampton Test it fell from 2,625 to 1,160. Elsewhere, the claimant count has dropped by 620 people, or 68%, in Winchester, and by 936 people, or 65%, in Eastleigh. Official figures also show 2 million more people are now in work than they were in 2010. But while the number of JSA claimants has dropped dramatically, the most recent unemployment figures show that there were 67,000 fewer people in employment in the UK from March to May this year than the 3 months leading up to February, the first fall since April 2013. Southampton Itchen MP Royston Smith said, "It's great news that over the last 5 years, the number of people relying on Job Seekers Allowance and Universal Credit while out of work here in Southampton has fallen by over 3,000.
Judging starts to find the year's best village. It's one of the most prestigious titles in the South. Every 12 months, some of the most picturesque and community-minded communities in the region battle it out in the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Village of the Year contest. Judging in this year's competition is already underway. As well as looking for an overall winner, the judges will be looking for the best small village, the best social care or health-related project, and the best example of a pub serving as a community hub. This year's finalists include North Waltham near Mitchell Deaver, Sway in the New Forest, Enham Alamein near Andover, and Funtley near Fareham. Last year's winner, Bembridge on the Isle of Wight, is also in the running. Sponsored by Fuller's Brewery, the contest is run by the Hampshire Association of Local Councils. Stephen Lugg, who has organised the event since 2006, said Hampshire and the island have fine tradition in this competition, and Hampshire Association of Local Councils is pleased to continue supporting it. The competition supports communities coming together and celebrating the many positive aspects of local life that we all enjoy. I can't wait to see who wins this year. The reigning Village of the Year always hosts the award ceremony, which means this year's presentation will take place in Bembridge. North Waltham villager Robert Cooper said, "North Waltham is a beautiful village with plenty of character and charm. The centre of the village comprises older houses circled by a backcloth of trees. North Waltham is very much a community." And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of horse riders in North Waltham near Mitchell Deaver on the Hampshire Village of the Year shortlist. And it's a village street with lots and lots of people all on lovely looking ponies and horses.
And here we have Commissioner Defend Spend. The Office of Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner has been criticised for spending twice as much as the body it replaced. The figures from the Taxpayers Alliance, TPA, show the county's OPCC spent 1.8 million more in 2013-14 than its predecessor, the Police Authority, in 2010-11. But Simon Hayes says that includes money received from the government. Commissioner Mr. Hayes has hit back at the TPA figures as misleading and totally wrong, saying that its budget was actually much less in 2013-14 than it was 4 years earlier. Mr. Hayes was elected as the county's first ever commissioner in 2012, with responsibilities including setting the budget and hiring the chief constable. The TPA had published figures showing the annual running cost of all the UK's OPCCs and comparing them with the old police authorities. Their figures show Hampshire's OPCC spent 1.798 million more in 2013-14 than the Police Authority in 2010-11, an increase of 106.8% and the biggest in the country. They also show that the total cost of the authority in 2010-11 was £1.683 million, whereas that rose to £3.481 million for the OPCC in 2013-14. Jonathan Iserby, the chief executive of the TPA, said, There's no doubt that taxpayers got a raw deal from the OPCC in 2013-14, especially compared to neighbouring areas who kept costs considerably lower. We need to ask serious questions about why this was the case, and taxpayers also deserve reassurance that lessons have been learnt and costs have been considerably cut since then. Ultimately, at a time when we're making savings everywhere across government, we need to ensure every penny is spent properly. But Mr. Hayes said, "It is bizarre to suggest that my office has doubled its expenditure and is spending £1.8 million on additional staff." He said the TPA's findings do not take into account changes to funding for local groups that were now supported by a community safety fund coordinated by the PCC, adding, "Clearly the Taxpayers' Alliance has mistaken the money I receive from government to support local councils' community safety partnerships as expenditure in my office budget. The fact is that after adjusting for community safety grant, my budget for the year in question was less than that of the previous police authority by some £147,000. This report misrepresents the value that police and crime commissioners are adding over and above the old police authorities, particularly here in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight."
Chili and Cheese Festival leaves some hot under the collar. Chefs turned up the heat in Winchester as thousands flocked to its first cheese and chili festival. The balmy weather was fired by an exhibition of spicy foods on 70 stalls at North Wharves Recreation Ground. Visitors could try samples, take cookery classes and lots more in temperatures peaking at 25 degrees. Around 5,000 people came through the gates on Saturday and Sunday for the event, featuring stunts, falconry, wine tasting, magic shows and a real ale festival. Organiser Simon Stewart hopes to convince Winchester City Council to let him repeat the festival next year in partnership with Winchester BID and street food magazine Street Scene. He said, "It's my passion, cheese and chili. We've always done events and always wanted to have a cheese and chili festival." Some were unhappy with the £5 adult entry fee, claiming the charge was poorly advertised. John O'Leary of Rance's Way said, "I think it was a cheek to charge this amount and very short-sighted, especially as the traders would have paid for their pitch anyway."
Goblin win for youngsters. Alsford schoolchildren were on TV on Thursday after they raced to the finish line trying to beat off stiff competition. Four Marks primary school children went head-to-head with their county peers, helped by CBBC Blue Peter presenters at this year's Gathering of Goblins race at Goodwood Motor Circuit. They were joined by TV presenters Barney Harwood and Radzi Chinyanganya, helping them race their green goblin and leaping leopard cars. The children battled it out alongside other local children, aged 9 to 11, including children from Twyford School and Wickham Primary School. Wickham was presented an award for the greenest body paint, and Twyford narrowly beat Four Marks to the first place in the lap of champions. Over 1,000 children took part last month, which was aired on Blue Peter at 5 p.m. yesterday. The event is made up of four races, the slalom, drag, sprint and lap of champions, seeing all contestants race around the 2.4-mile track. Organised by Green Power Education Trust, the aim of the event is to help inspire the next generation of engineers. And this is accompanied by a very exciting, colourful picture of the three podiums, or are they podia, of groups of schoolchildren on each podium, first, second and third, all raising their arms in triumph and looking very colourful in different uniform tabards and things.
And now options for cities' energy. City councillors and officers toured solar farms and wind turbines across the south as part of their commitment to cut Winchester's carbon footprint. Members heard energy-saving LED lights have been installed at the Guildhall and car parks at Chesil Street and Tower Street. Other recent measures in Winchester include sensor-activated lights in Chesil Street car park, new charging points for electric cars, and a town forum initiative encouraging landlords to install solar panels. The Guildhall team visited Westmill Wind Farm, a community-run venture in Oxfordshire, which powers around 2,500 homes a year, and then went on to Basingstoke College of Technology. The tour, organised by Winchester Action on Climate Change, finished at the Barfoots facility near Bognor Regis, which uses supermarket food waste to create heat and gas. Moving to a low-carbon economy will be good for the district. It would not only reduce fuel costs for our residents, said Councillor Frank Pearson, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing. It will bring in new business and jobs, as well as keeping the city and villages attractive for residents and visitors.
Crews save man from flat fire. A man has been rescued from a flat fire in Winchester. Firefighters were sent from Winchester and Eastleigh to a kitchen fire in Sarum Road on Friday morning at around 3 a.m, where one man was helped to flee a ground floor flat. The crews used two breathing apparatus, one main jet, one hose reel jet, and a large fan to extinguish the fire, roughly 50 minutes later. The man was then treated at the scene by paramedics for smoke inhalation. Winchester firefighter Pete Locke said the man had had barbecued disposal trays, and he put those in the oven, and the oven was on, and whatever was left in them overcooked and burned, and he'd fallen asleep. We waited an hour for the ambulance to turn up because he had suffered smoke inhalation.
Warning on results. The head of Peter Simmons College has warned of possible marking errors as hundreds of students collect their A-level results today. I think that means yesterday. Stephen Carville expects the college to beat or match its usual strong performance, but is preparing staff to chase oddities as soon as results are known. He's not been informed of particular subjects which may suffer, but expects mistakes every year. There's always something strange that happens, he said. There's always some oddities where we have to chase up the exam boards. Last year, for example, we had some odd results in sociology and English language, which we chased up with the exam board, and it resulted in some students going up two whole grades. Last year, 98.5% of students achieved an A star to E pass, with 82.5% reaching Cs or more, and 1 in 10 notching an A star. Meanwhile, Sparsholt College is preparing to take students through clearing who change their preferred university or fail to get the grades. The college is relatively small, and its land-based higher education courses are largely taught outside the classroom, giving it flexibility to take late applicants, said Dr. Barbara Tarr Coulson, Dean of Higher Education. Principal Tim Jackson added, "We are keen to ensure people are aware that it is not too late to apply, as many think if they have missed the formal UCAS deadline in January, they have to wait another whole year to apply."
And now Banker tackles 40,000 mile challenge. Before now, his only sailing experience was in a dinghy on the River Hamble. But Alsford banker James Shepherd fulfills a childhood dream this month when he embarks on an epic journey. He and dozens of other amateurs are days away from the start of the 40,000 nautical mile clipper around the world race. James, 30, of Gray's Farm close Cheriton, has secured a year off work to take on all eight legs for the Mission Performance Team. It is an ambition since he heard a talk on sailing the world at Winchester College aged 13. He said, "The most challenging thing will be for everyone to motivate themselves in the toughest of circumstances. The personal relationships on board are very important because you have 21 people on a boat in a confined space, so there will be a lot of tension. We need to be able to motivate each other to carry on." The 12 teams set out on the first leg from London to Rio de Janeiro on August the 30th, and the race will finish in London on July 2016. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very cheerful-looking James Shepherd at Gosport Marina on the media day on Tuesday, and it's in front of all the boats that are about to set out on this long round-the-world challenge.
Hoodie stole bag from woman, 44. Police are hunting a thief who snatched a woman's handbag at Winchester train station. The 44-year-old victim from the Gambia in West Africa was at the station when her bag, containing Samsung mobile phones and cash in sterling and dollars, was taken. She described the mugger as white, aged around 16 or 17 years old, around 5'9", tall, of slim build, with dark, short, straight hair, and wearing a grey hooded top with a blue top underneath and black trousers. He was last seen heading in the direction of Stockbridge Road. Police are appealing for anyone who saw what happened in the incident, which took place around 4 p.m. last Wednesday, or who knows who the man is, to call them on 101.
And here's a human interest sports story for you, if you like football. Modest Bentley is a Rolls-Royce striker, it says. Before arriving at Winchester City, the only thing Paul Wiltshire knew about Warren Bentley was what he'd read in the papers. Once he had met him in person, City's new assistant boss realised that the area's most prolific goalscorer was nothing like he had imagined. Bentley possesses none of the swagger you might expect from a man who has banged in over 150 goals in the last 3 years. Slight of frame, and modest of nature, it's hard to believe that here is a player who has taken the Southern, One, South and West by storm this week, netting a staggering 9 goals in just 180 minutes of football since stepping up from the Wessex ranks. Having blitzed Bridgewater with 5 goals in an astonishing 42-minute spell on Saturday, as City opened the season 7-2 victors, goal-getting Bentley was then at it again at Wimborne Town on Tuesday. He sank a hat-trick to help put City 5-4 up at Cuthbury. And even when they went down to 10 men after Adam Tomaso had been dismissed for handball, the 25-year-old pulled another magical finish out of his impressive repertoire to secure a breathless 6-5 win. For Wiltshire, left in charge in the absence of holidaying manager Paul Masters, it's been a real privilege to witness Bentley's first steps into the Southern League. The silky, skilled ex-saint, appointed Masters number 2 last month, admitted, "I had never spoken to Warren before I came here. I knew his reputation, but only from the reports I'd read in the newspaper. He's completely different to what I was expecting. You think of goal scorers being a bit brash and look at me, here I come. But Warren's nothing like that. He's a real unassuming lad. I like him a lot." Playing-wise, Wiltshire reckons Bentley possesses skills you can't teach. "You look at the way he strikes the ball and you see he's a natural footballer and a natural goal scorer," he said. "He's good with both feet and has skills you can't teach. He scored a lot of goals at Wessex level, and my experience is that the higher you play, the more time you get, and I think Warren will only get better."
And now teen mud rescue. A teenager had to be rescued after he was stuck in mud up to his waist near Winchester Leisure Centre. Firefighters from Winchester, Redbridge and Fareham were sent to Gordon Road after a 15-year-old boy got trapped near the River Park Leisure Centre at about 4:30 p.m. on Tuesday. Paramedics from South Central Ambulance Service treated the boy after firefighters eventually freed him from the mud with the use of a mud lance about an hour later. A spokesman for the service said he was assessed for injuries such as hypothermia but did not require any further treatment. It is not known how he became stuck.
Youths pitch their ideas to dragons. Young people in Winchester pitched their ideas for social action to a panel of dragons as part of a community engagement project. National Citizen Service, NCS, is helping youngsters devise fundraising ideas for local organisations. They were put through their paces in the style of TV show Dragon's Den, explaining why their projects will help the community. The volunteers have spent the last month on trips, getting to know each other and brainstorming ways to raise money. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine joined the group at Mountbatten School Services to hear their pitches. Danny Smith, NCS Program Manager at Mountbatten School, said, "NCS is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for school leavers to experience new things, meet people from a range of backgrounds, and make a real positive difference to the lives of people in their local area." Mr. Brine said, "NCS's flagship policy I championed in opposition many years ago, so it's great to see it thriving in this area. It was a pleasure to hear the fundraising ideas of these bright young people."
That was the last item for this week, I'm afraid. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks and goodbye to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as you've finished listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.